Good morning, KNS listeners. My name is Bud Wiry, and I'm excited to be back here in the shop again with you guys today as the shop welcomes our first guest. Here in the shop, we have Mr. Mike Broach. He's a former county council candidate. He's worked on several campaigns around here. Mr. Broach, tell us a little something about yourself.
Hi, Bud. Thanks for having me on. Like you said, I'm somewhat of a local political operator. I've been involved in several county-level, municipal-level campaigns in Boone County and surrounding cities and counties over the last couple election cycles. The last primary election cycle, I was involved pretty heavily in a congressional campaign as well at the federal level. So I've got, you know, a little bit of political experience in the last few years, and that's where we're at.
No, you've definitely been one of the people around here that I've contacted several times over the course of the last year when we're getting into different political situations where I'm looking for information, because you've been a wealth of knowledge. And that's why part of the reason why I wanted to have you on the show here today, because I was looking to dive in to this IEDC leap. It's the big elephant in the room, and both of us live close enough to it that when the wind blows just right, we can smell the tax dollars.
Sure enough.
So I wanted to jump into it a little bit. So just to start, we have the IEDC is pretty much coming in here and using taxpayer funds to bribe farmers to screw their neighbors. And I don't know what your take on it is, but mine is, if the IEDC becomes the albeit land buyer for private business, then where's that going to leave the private businessman?
Well, it's, you know, it's already, if you look at the land values in Boone County, it's already put the private businessman behind the gun before the thing's even complete. But you're 100% correct. The states come in and they put on their developer hat. Why our state government is playing developer, I'm not sure. But they are, they're coming in to Boone County, and they're choosing winners and losers. That's exactly what's happening. So it's very unfortunate to see, though, neighbors doing this kind of stuff to neighbors. You know, I think you'd like to think that these folks would be good stewards of their land, yet they just allow the state to flash a little money, and here we are. You know, everybody's property values are going up. You can't, you couldn't even sell your home probably if you wanted to right now, because people are thinking, why would I move to Boone County in an area that's getting ready to be overcome with development?
Well, yeah, and I mean, it just leaves you to be puzzled why they even decided to make Lebanon the area that they're going to do all this big development in. Because right now, we're having this huge water issue that most people know. There's lawsuits going around about it. But Lebanon in the Boone County area doesn't have the water to push this big resources. But what we do have out here is some of the best farm ground in Indiana. I mean, you don't have to travel very far from here in any direction before you start seeing irrigation rigs. But we're literally going to plow off the resources that we got, steal somebody else's resource for some big government wet dream.
Yeah, that's unfortunately exactly what's happening. You know, I'm a lifelong resident of Boone County, so I grew up here with my grandparents and my teachers in school telling me that this is the richest farmland, not only in Indiana, but the world. You know, I don't know how much truth there is to that, but it's definitely very, very rich farm ground. So, you know, it doesn't make any sense. The water's not here. I don't know why they would, you know, why they would bring it here to begin with. But I think that myself included, several of us have reasons to believe that there are evil reasons, actually, for them bringing this project here.
Well, yeah, and I think I would have to agree with that. And so they started to go right after, as many of the people that are following along know, they started to go right after the Wabash aquifers up there in Lafayette. And then after a pretty substantial pushback by the local communities up and down the Wabash, then they started to back off a little bit. But now I think really what they're doing is they're just building the pipeline from the other side. So if you look at this new plan that the Gentry camp has come out with here recently, with having citizens come up from Indianapolis. Well, we've heard for a long time now that that Indianapolis has water problems of their own. So how long, Mr. Broach, do you think that water is going to be flowing north before they force everybody to take it out of the Wabash and that water starts going south?
Well, you know, it's hard to say. It won't be long, I can tell you that. But, you know, with the pipeline coming up from the south, Citizens Energy, I mean, we're still 75 million gallons short, with for well, from what their prediction was to begin with, which was 100 million gallons a day. So, you know, I don't see this even appeasing the situation hardly at all. I just don't see how. I mean, it would alleviate, I guess, the current situation that the mayor has gotten himself into, where there's zero development. You know, you can't even build a new home because there's not enough water. So I suppose this pipeline that the citizens of Indiana are expected to pay $50 million for, or more, or most likely, is just going to alleviate that. It's going to raise the obviously the water bills of Lebanon citizens, and I think they'll be immediately trying to get that pipeline down here from the Wabash River, because we're already 75 million gallons in the hole.
See, I think there's a little bit of a smoke and mirrors going here, because I've reached out to some of my contacts over there in the Whitestown area, and they don't believe that that area has much water to give off of it. So when Citizens is saying that they're going to take 25 million gallon that they previously said they didn't have, and they're now going to pull that from the Westfield and the Whitestown area, well, half of that equation's already told me that he don't know how that's possible. Now, I mean, I don't know. Maybe there's information that he's not aware of, up to date, something else. But that leaves some pretty big questions. And I agree with you 100%. The people of Lebanon are going to be shocked if they start paying the Whitestown water rates. And then on top of that, you're actually giving up your own water security to an outside entity. Because right now, Lebanon residents, they control their water. They vote for the people inside there. They pump their own water. They're in control of their own water future. But now, if you got citizens, they're delivering to Carmel, Zionsville, all the, if that whole system starts to have problems and they have to start picking and choosing, then Lebanon might end up on the short end of that stick.
Well, I mean, they're going to choose whoever has the most money, right? I mean, that's just
Absolutely.
the way it works. It's a business. Citizens Energy is a private utility, and they're going to go to the highest bidder, and that's just the way that it's going to, you know, unfold.
Yeah, no, and see, and that gets back. We have all these problems with getting the development here, but yet they're still forcing it upon this area anyway. And then it leaves you to wonder, not everybody would. What Matt Gentry's really done is he has created the water scarcity, and now he's trying to force the solution on everybody. Because everybody's known. I was in talks with one of the old mayors on one of the Facebook pages the other day, and he said years ago they knew that they were going to be encountering water problems. So why have we been bringing in water needy companies? They've intentionally been pushing us to this point. You know, create the crisis and then sell the solution. And I think that's a lot of what we're getting here.
Yeah, I think so. You know, if you look at you know, Matt Gentry's business outside of the mayor's office.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, his family, his father, they're very, very connected at the highest levels of political, well, Republican politics in Indiana. So, you know, it's speculation, right? But it makes me wonder if there weren't plans, you know, years and years ago.
No, Mr. Brosh, that's an absolutely great point. Because so for all our listeners out there, what he's talking about is Mike Gentry, Matt Gentry's father, and Matt Gentry, they own a political consulting company called Market Red. So they're like a Republican consulting company. And from the paperwork I've seen, they have taken around $9 million over the years from different politicos, and I'm sure there's some of the same movers and shakers that are pushing all this IED stuff. And then that actually gets to the Mike Braun campaign right now, because Mike Braun has given the Gentry Co. Hundreds of thousands of dollars. And even when pressed, I've pressed personally every one of the candidates. You know, Micah Beckwith had real good answers on a lot of this LEAP stuff. Donald Rainwater had a lot of good stuff on it. But Mike Braun won't touch this stuff with a 10-foot pole, and seeing how he's got all the connections, I'm led to believe that he's an all systems go on this project.
Well, you know, I don't know exactly when this was and in what interview with Mike Braun this was and who he was even speaking to at the time, but I remember watching an interview a year or so ago before he was elected in the primary as the Republican candidate or nominee. He was talking about if he's elected governor, that he will have the whole world investing in Indiana. So, I mean, that's all I needed to hear to know that he's not our friend as far as the IEDC goes. He's going to step right into the shoes that Holcomb is in right now, and he's going to fill those shoes to the fullest, it sounds like to me. I mean, if you're willing to have the world invest in Indiana and sell the citizens and the land out to the world, then, you know, I don't know that he's really the guy that we need in there.
See, I was pretty disappointed in Micah because early on talking to him, he had great responses about the IEDC and the government becoming land buyers and all mm-hmm. this stuff. And to some degree, it looks like he's been taken to the woodshed a little bit because he did a post a little while back that he since deleted talking about how, you know, turning Indiana into the Silicon Valley of the Midwest. Mm-hmm. And what nobody understands is we're not looking to become the Silicon Valley of the Midwest. I mean, if you look at what they're doing right now, this is a complete uniparty move because they're sitting there they're plowing over rural conservative Hoosiers to replace them with tech liberals. I mean, in what world does this make good sense for Republican politics?
Yeah. It doesn't. It doesn't. And I, again, this is information that I got from someone, and, you know, they're doing that, but they, you know, it goes so far as to, you know, they strategically picked Boone County because of the amount of voters. So this was the area that had the least amount of voters.
And the mayor that was going to grease the skids.
And the mayor, right? And the mayor that's going to grease it. So this was just the perfect place. And it makes me wonder if years ago this wasn't that, you know, the reason that the Gentrys moved here to begin with. You know, let's go to Boone County and see what we can come up with there. They don't have very many voters. So they can't fight the powers to be.
Well, you look at this last election that got put Gentry back in the mayor seat for again. He literally won it by under 300 votes. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was disgusting. Now, the Van Horn that ran against him, you know, he had voted for a tax increase for the sheriff's new justice center out there. So he had some baggage of his own, so he wasn't a great candidate, but it was literally like 900 votes to 700. It was something that sad. And in a city of 17,700, that's beyond sad. But that's what they do. They sit there and they make all the voters believe that the government's going to do what they want anyway, disenfranchise them, and then they don't show up, and then the party can keep itself in power.
Yeah. Well, and that's... It's a horribly systematic thing that you see all throughout politics, you know, especially in the Republican Party. But yeah, I mean, that's just the way that they do things, and it's very unfortunate. So, you know, we've got a group of folks in Boone County, though, myself included, who are kind of standing up against it. So, you know, yourself and, you know, many others, but you know, I have hope. We'll see some change.
No, there's a lot of good out there right now. And at the wind and solar meeting that we had with the commissioners, I mean, that really brought me a lot of hope. And you spoke at that, and did a damn fine job doing it, if I say so myself. But we packed that house in there. Mm-hmm. And after that, those commissioners, there was no way that they were going to vote to approve that when... That sort of thing, you're around here in the politics just like I am. This sort of thing doesn't happen around here very often that we have that kind of energy. Mm-hmm. And that's, I know a lot of the candidates that I talk to for the commissioner race up and above that, I encourage them to harness that energy.
Yeah.
But because I told them, I said, if you look around, the energy is not for plowing over all the conservative voters. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just, it's not.
Yeah. Yeah, there was a lot of single issue voters in this last primary election. Obviously the IEDC, the farmland thing, and the solar was a big deal. I was proud to speak at that, and you know, on behalf of the people, myself included, my family. I'm a lifelong citizen here. I don't want to see that kind of stuff happen. So just to kind of segue a little bit, not involving Boone County, I was able to take though. We've been able to take that model that we used at that solar moratorium meeting, and put it in place in Fountain County, and they've since passed a moratorium.
Oh, that's awesome.
We're working with some people in St. Joe County up in South Bend, trying to get them a moratorium as well. And so we're sharing this information, you know, now across the state, crowdsourcing and stuff like that. And we're having some victories far and wide outside of Boone County.
So. Yeah, and that's good. And that's what it takes, because we're all on the same team. We all have the same goals. Just like Mike said, he's a lifelong Boone County resident. So am I. I mean, when we talk about these projects are incredibly close to home. And then when you do like we do and you're more political and you kind of keep a better eye on it, things like, you know, the gentry's taking outside money. Well, you know that the town folk ain't the only people paying their bills. And then you got like, so here's another one that's been crossing my mind here lately. So if this new water plan is to be approved, the city council would have to approve it, right?
Mm-hmm. They would, yeah.
Well, we just had that lawsuit that came around here not too long ago. Who's also named in that lawsuit?
City council.
The city council members. Yep. So did somebody put this lawsuit on to apply pressure to the city council members to get their own selves out of a sling? Because that company will not be the only one to probably be able to successfully say that they were in some way harmed by these actions.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say. That's a very, very good possibility, because that is the kind of power that you see in politics, is big, large companies like that are able to leverage lawsuits, and they're able to leverage jobs and you know, make promises to people to get them to vote their way or to maybe back off of an issue. So, you know, it could go either way. I mean, they could be a situation where they're actually harmed, but it's probably more likely that, yeah, it's leverage, you know. But,
and I mean, that thought just crossed my mind. It's like, okay, so I ran several polls in this last week, which you may have caught some of them on different boards, and I had hundreds of respondents to these polls. And in a small town like this, that puts the margin of error within a 2 or 3. But so of the people that support Gentry's water plan, we're between 9% and 12%. That means almost 90% of the population within a point or two margin of error, by the way, you know, I've read a lot of these polls, and is the city council really going to pass something that unpopular?
I mean, it just, we'll have to wait and see, but, you know, this is no different than, you know, you can think of this as Congress, right? I mean, the Congress does this every day. They go right in there, and they'll come out, and they'll tell their constituents, hey, you know, we hear what you have to say. They don't necessarily say which way they're going to go, but we hear what you're saying, and we're with you. And then they go right in there, and they vote against the people, and they do it. I mean, we see this at the state level, the congressional level, and unfortunately the municipal and county levels as well. So
I know, but we're getting to the point where as more people, I mean, you and others, become engaged, it's getting to the point where we're starting to look these people in the eye when they're doing this. Mm-hmm. You know, when all this was working great when they were doing it in the darkness, nobody's paying attention, nobody's going to the meetings, nobody's watching them. But when somebody's looking you in the eye, this starts to become a little more uncomfortable. You know, it's not the same game anymore, because that's what's happened for so long. They've been able to just get away with whatever they wanted. Mm-hmm. They've been able, like I said, they know everybody was mad about it, but nobody knew the meeting was even happening. It was happening at 9 o'clock in some meeting room that nobody knew where it was. But now we're starting to apply a little more pressure. So if you got something where 90% of the people are saying, we don't want this, we don't want to give up the sovereignty of our water, we don't want to do these things, are they really going to do that?
Well, you know, you'd hope that they wouldn't, right? I mean, they do work for the people, and it seems as if that they've forgotten that. And, you know, I will say, not in necessarily defending a politician, because that is not at all what I'm doing, but, you know, we have a lot of apathetic people, not in just Boone County, but across the nation. And, you know, everybody complains and moans and says, I don't like that. But then they just sit on their hands, and they allow me and you to sit here and talk about it on the radio. Or, you know, maybe I show up at a meeting and no one else does, and they don't vote my way. But I'm making them do it right in front of me, you know. And so at least it's on record with me, and I can take that out and share it. So, you know, it's difficult. We definitely need to get more engagement. People need to become more engaged.
But that's what I feel like I'm trying to do here at the shop, and I'm glad you're here with me, is I'm trying to reach out to more of these regular everyday voters, because they're a market of people that nobody really connects with or goes after. I mean, you listen to some of these other local shows or whatever, these people are in a monotone, make you want to drive into a tree before you hit a thing, and nobody's putting out the information. Our local news isn't telling people what this information. And I think there'll be a market, because I just like what we've seen on X after Elon Musk bought it, and how their numbers are going astronomical. People are attracted to truth. They're attracted to real information, and that's what they need to get. And if we're going to engage people, that's why they became so apathetic. Like I said, for so long they've been lied to. They don't get. I was telling my wife and the kids at dinner just tonight. I told them, I said, as much as I stay into the politics and try to figure everything out, I sometimes go into a voting booth and I don't know what that person stands for. Because, you know, you have to spend an amazing amount of time.
You do.
And why hasn't our local news been providing that service for us?
Well, I mean, it's very difficult to do your research. That's why I think local politics are so important, because it is much easier to do research. You know, it's easy to do research on Mike Broach. He lives in Boone County. He's lived here his whole life. You can ask a few people. You can look him up. I say him, but that's me.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
It's hard to research. When you don't have resources being provided to you, you look around. Johnson County is a great example. You go. I've been to a couple Lincoln Day dinners in Johnson County, and you know, when you sit down at the table, there is a I don't know how many page, probably 50 or 60 page magazine that they've put together with all of the candidate information, who they are, what they stand for, you know, little bios about them, things like that. And, you know, that stuff's available to any voter. They send that stuff out. They do, the party there does their job to try to inform the citizenry and the voters as to who their choices are. You don't see that in Boone County, and there's a lot of counties around that are that way. Hendricks County, they have their newspaper does a special election edition, and they put all the candidates from federal to municipal to county. They give those candidates a little interview, and then they have a whole special edition that they put together to try to provide information and resources to voters. Those things, I've never seen one of those in Boone County ever. So without a politician knocking on your door around here, you're not gonna, it's really difficult to know who there is to vote for.
Well, yeah, I mean, when you get a flyer in the mail or something, I mean, you glance at that with a grain of salt anyway, because you automatically know that it's most likely a bunch of lies anyway. But there's nobody to really hold, like we were talking about it briefly earlier. So in this last election, had it not been for the handful of chat boards in the Lebanon area that allowed free speech, then everybody would not have known that the gentries were funding the Corey Coots for commissioner. I mean, right. It was literally the gentries, the IEDC, Structure Point, I think. I mean, it was those type of businesses that were all, it was all the people connected to IEDC, fully funded this candidate, and our local newspaper didn't hum a peep about it. And so nobody would have known. But because of these free speech boards and those of us on the ground putting in the work, everybody found out about it, and he didn't break 37% in this election.
Yeah, he was slaughtered pretty much instantaneously. I wasn't surprised to see that. They, you know, the gentry model is to go out and start punching everybody in the head. That's, you know, voters in Indiana don't like that, especially in Boone County. They don't want, if you can keep it out of the mud, you should. You know, they teach you otherwise when you're trained in political operations. That's not how they do things. And you can see that when you have a company like Market Rad, Matt Gentry, Mike Gentry involved in a campaign. They went so far as to create a PAC. You know, they created a PAC and got money from those businesses that you were just talking about, who later had to apologize for the behavior of the PAC in order to just slander the candidate that was against their man.
So. Well, and that's what they did. They came in with big pocketfuls of money, and they tried to buy this. They tried to buy this position, because if you drove around through Lebanon, so, you know, the Coots gentry coming from the Lebanon has a lot of residents compared to the county, and they had that place blanketed with the giant signs and everything else. Mm-hmm. I mean, they rolled out it with deep pockets, but everybody was able to see who they were, what the game was, and it was just proof that the gentry policies and these projects around the Lebanon Boone County area are not popular. Because if they were popular, Corey Coots would be a commissioner right now, and he'd have more than 12% on these polls talking about his silly water project.
Yep, 100% truth. You know, not only did they have deep pockets, they had, you know, Market Red is the best in the business in Indiana. So, you know, they had the best political machine in the Republican Party working for Corey Coots at the Boone County level, and he still only got 30%.
Couldn't break 37%.
You know,
so that's awesome.
That speaks volumes, in my opinion.
And it is, and that's why things are changing. And we also talked about this a little bit pre-show here, was some of these chat boards that were on that, you know, you get on and posting about. So there was one that I referenced yesterday, and it has 10,700 members. Well, if you look at the Lebanon Reporter in our area, its combined print and online is probably between 3,000 and 8,000 based off my research. So on a chat board like that, a hot post rendering three quarters of its people seeing it, you're literally getting the same reach. So everybody in town literally can have the same reach as the newspaper if they want to put in the work and they put the content out, and it's to where people, that's citizens journalism right there. And that's why the gentries weren't able to buy the election, and that's why we're starting to actually gain a little ground on them, and it's bothering them.
You know, I think that's 100% factual. The grassroots movement is very powerful right now. The grassroots movement in Indiana is, I would say, probably a little more stout than a lot of other states, and the grassroots movement in Boone County is very strong. So, you know, they've got a lot of competition, as they just found out in the last election, and they have even more competition moving forward at whatever avenue they try to take. So I don't think Mr. Gentry is going to run again, but we'll see. I wouldn't be surprised if he didn't throw his hat in the ring again.
Well, he already said that he's out for the 27 or for the next election. He's already declared that he's going to be out. And mm-hmm. and like we, you know, went on a little bit of before, is we're not the only, you know, the voters are not the only people buttering the gentry's bread.
Nope.
So, I mean, I think people do good to keep a close eye on lots of people that have been connected to this project moving on forward in the years to come. Because I think we might be surprised where we start seeing some of them end up.
Oh, yeah. No, I wouldn't be surprised at all to see Matt Gentry, you know, go straight from mayor to a state-level political position, you know, as very possible that was always the plan. He does have a political science degree, so I mean that's been his aspiration. You know, and from other political operators that I know that have been in the game for years, you know, 20-30 years, you know, they talk about and have told me stories of Matt Gentry when he was 12 years old, you know, being right there involved in a campaign, knocking doors. So he's literally grown up in politics, and he's done it his whole life, and you know, they're going to I believe use it to their advantage.
Now see, Mike, you hit a great point there, and that's something it's really bothered me lately, because I feel as I've always known the gentries, because being political people, they always operated by the laws of politics. Mm-hmm. How they talk to the constituents, the moves they make, making sure they stuck kind of close to the conservative Republican values. But in the past couple years, I've seen them completely abandon that. And that scares me, because that all that tells me is that we're not the only ones buttering their bread now. Because if you get online there and look at some of the ways that Matt Gentry and Mike Gentry and some of them talk to constituents, that is not the polished politicians that they really are.
Yeah.
That's people defending something they're doing for other reasons. That's how I view it. I mean, I can't help but look at it any other way, because just when I see a politician do that, you're like, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, if you look at, you know, state level politicians and federal level politicians, and when they talk to you, if anybody who's ever had a conversation or sent an email or anything like that to a politician at the state house level or at the federal level, you know, you get a polished response generally. And it's kind of like, let me shoo you away and let me get you out of here. You know, they just want to, they want you to go away, because they do genuinely believe that there are betters. You know, they think that we're lesser, then it's a weird thing to say out loud, but it's true. You know, I've met and spoke and consulted with many politicians, and that's just the way that it is. So they have in their mind rules for thee and not for me. So, you know, they're going to be polished, and that's not really who they are. It's a facade. It's not not at all who they are. Who they are is who is paying them. Whoever's paying them, that's who they are. They're whoever they want them to be. Whoever has the politician's ear, whether it be Matt Gentry or the President of the United States, whoever has their ear, well, then they're going to do their bidding. And so if it's not you and it's not me because we're not funding them, well, then they're going to listen to the people that are funding them. So, you know, again, it kind of goes back to the apathy from the citizens, where we need to get more engaged. But at the same time, we need to get people in there that are going to be genuine and honest and do what's constitutional and right for the people.
Yeah, and I think we all agree we need to get people in there where the only people paying them is the voter.
Yep.
Because when these checks are coming in from a lot of different places, it makes me start to wonder when I'm seeing them do things that aren't supported by the population. I'm just left to believe that, you know, I'm a firm believer, everybody's got a master, and I don't believe theirs is the voter. So, well, yeah, Mike, I loved having you in the shop today. We've hit my time limit here, and I think we could keep going on forever, and I really hope to have you back again. So, you got one last word to wrap her up here?
I know. I appreciate you having me, bud, and it was a good conversation, and I look forward to the next time.
All right. Thanks, Mike.